Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming, delightful, and upset Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I know I'm supposed to feed into the fact that you're upset, but damn, I'm feeling good because I'm not furloughed anymore.
And now, from what I hear, you get paid for all this time at the end of the month, right?
Well, there's one difference, though. See, I didn't get to stay home and be furloughed because I am essential.
Ooh.
I had to go to work. But on the other hand, I also, as I may have to apologize ahead of time, despite all of Corey's good advice, you know, about, you know, watching your hands and bringing hand sanitizer to the con, I caught the world's worst cold. And being that, you know, I'm diabetic, I got rheumatoid, so I have a suppressed immune system, it knocked the living crap out of me. So I actually was out 4 days during the furlough sick. Now, the thing is about a furlough is that it's illegal, or they are unable to pay out sick time, vacation time, comp time, or any other type of non-paid status or non-work status. So, in other words, even though I have sick time, I can't use it. So I signed a nice form saying, yes, I understand this will be unpaid, you know, which – at the time, it was like you didn't know when you were going to get paid. So everybody was kind of like real. It wasn't like a relaxing thing. It's like being unemployed. You know, you don't get to relax because you got bills coming. But Chris and I were ready for it because way back when they were talking about furloughing people in, I think it was just February or March, we saved our tax return and we still got it. So we would have lived off that. And being that we'll probably do this again in January, you know, I said, we'll just leave the tax return in there and we'll just deal with it. And I'm also fired up the eBay auctions again. So if anybody's looking for some cheap variant covers or just other bric-a-brac, you can always go online. And of course, I'll give it. Anybody buys anything, just send me an email and I'll make sure you don't pay shipping on it. Which means you could get a 99-cent graphic novel, and it'll cost me more to ship it to you than I'll make an actual profit. That's the way I roll. I'm crazy and proud of it. K-R-A-Y-Z if you're looking for me on eBay. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. Corey, what's upsetting you?
I fired up the Skype today for recording this here podcast, and I don't know if you got the message. You probably didn't. But there's a little message that said, hey, you know, your Pamela add-in will not work after December 2013.
Why?
Skype, now owned by Microsoft, is closing their software in a way that third-party applications will not work on it.
Oh, that's very Apple-like.
I don't know how we're going to record the calls. Joe, I have one idea.
Hey, that's a first. I mean, what is it?
You need to get a new job. Don't worry. Still a government job. You just need to switch over to the NSA because they record all of the calls on Skype. And then, you know, you could A, have a job, and B, record the podcast.
That's not a bad idea. But the problem is the sheer amount of volume that the NSA swallows up is making it in such a way that it's impossible for anybody to actually use any of the data in a useful means. You recording so many programs on your DVR that you never get a chance to watch any of them.
But Joe, just put in the search engine. Comic books, pie, Christina Hendricks.
You're going to say Aguilera, weren't you?
I don't know what I was going to say. I'm tired. It's Monday morning, Joe.
Yes.
My work week starts Saturday at midnight.
Good for you.
I already have in 24 hours this work week.
But are you getting any time off? I mean, we saw that picture you posted on Facebook. You looked real droopy-eyed.
Yeah. I am going to Chicago next weekend to meet with my friend Nicole, who's coming over from Germany. And a little nervous about it. And she was, oh, why are you nervous? Why are you nervous? Well, she's bringing her mom.
Well, isn't that a Sam Malone fantasy? Doing a mother-daughter?
I think it's more, mothers tend not to like me.
That's true. My mom doesn't like you, and she's never met you.
You know, my mom puts up with me, I think. My mom tolerates me.
Yeah.
Kind of, well, because she has to. It's the law.
You were never breastfed, were you?
My mom said we should just be friends.
Good night, everybody. And with that,
the crickets were happy.
We must have some sponsors for this here show.
Why, yes, we do. We have a sponsor, and that sponsor is DreamHost.com, the best darn web host in the whole known universe.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, you still haven't built a website.
No, I'm nobody.
But when you do build a website,
I'll be somebody.
What you do, you go to DreamHost.com, you put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and you get $20 off your first year.
Cool.
And... yeah, you know, I've been with them for 14 years. Their price has not gone up in that time, but their service and the amount of bandwidth and the amount of storage space goes up every year. So you're nobody without a website. You need a website because you know, remember all that stuff you had on Friendster? Yeah, it's gone.
It's gone.
All that stuff you had on The Tribe?
Yep.
It's gone.
Forget about it.
The stuff you had on MySpace, you really don't want that because it's all...
No, I already downloaded it. I got it.
Well, and it's embarrassing, too. Come on. Most of the people who are listening to this, they were young enough that their MySpace pages were filled with all that blinky, blingy shit.
And they poked people and had snowball fights.
Yeah. So you don't want that. You've got stuff on Facebook. Yeah, it's not going to last forever. They're going to screw that up. There'll be something else.
They're doing it today. Even now, you can't put in a status. And there's no one you can talk to. But I bet DreamHost, if you had technical difficulties, you could talk to them.
Not only could you talk to them, you could do an online chat with them, or you could call them, or you could email them. Usually, I work with them via email, and they send back very detailed emails telling me exactly what to do to fix the problem. So it's DreamHost.com.
Neat.
And if you would like to advertise on this here podcast, go ahead and email me at corey.strode@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks. So I guess we're going to one of the old segments that we have not done since you were called away to Alaska.
Yeah.
Since you went north. To Alaska.
With a big old dog named Mush.
He went north to rush the gold.
Yes. I could see Russia from my plateau.
Ooh.
Had a whale of a good time.
It was the Red Guardian there?
It's hard to say because there wasn't much daylight.
Oh.
I think he hangs out on the east side of Russia now.
Red Guardian, one of the obscure Marvel characters. We haven't done obscure characters in a while either.
No. But now that I'm home and I'm digging through my comic collection, we may run across some.
Okay.
And actually, this now has a purpose.
Ooh.
A great comic book sort of 13-014, because as we talked about, I think we talked about, my old partner Pat and I are going to get together and do one final Comic-Con. Next Fall Con, we'll be doing the... reuniting of P&J Comics.
Will it still be called P&J?
Of course.
It should be called J&P.
No. That's a big bank overtone. P&J is much more friendly. I mean, you're not scared of a peanut butter jelly sandwich, unless you got, like, peanut allergies or something. But
Or, you know, unless it's been possessed by the devil. hey, it's almost Halloween. These things happen.
No, I'm not giving you that one. But anyways, as I sort through the collection, we're going to be talking about the course of the titles we run across because that's kind of fun. But I'm also going to be weeding it out because there are a number of things that I probably will never read. I don't care if I ever read. And I'm just going to bring them to the con and blow them out. I haven't decided on how I'm going to do it, but one of the guys at FallCon, this past FallCon, you know, the cold I'm still sucking snot for, he had a huge, huge amount of comics, just $2 a pop. And then he had some more collectible ones at $5 a pop. And I think I'm going to do that. You know, just regardless of what it is, just blow it out. And I'm not quite sure what I'm going to keep, what I'm going to go with. I mean, a lot of things I can convert to graphic novels. So it's like, do I really need two runs of Joe Kubert's DC Tarzan? Or would I rather just get rid of my Defenders since I have them all in Essentials? So decisions. But I figure I got a year to do it. And if I don't get sent away for like an entire year like I did 2 years ago, where I seemed to be I was always gone. So now that's the goal. So it's going to be done by FallCon. We have set a goal. We're going to do it. And by we, I mean me. So
I was going to say, what is this we? Do you have a mouse in your pocket?
Well, I got, we want to keep it PG after all. I mean, it's, we don't want Nicole's mom to listen to the podcast and she'll be like, you know what? You're not going to the U.S. So anyways, again, just a random box. We'll probably do about half of it because there's this particular one ended up being a lot of books that I just kept onesies or twosies of. You know, I didn't keep complete runs. And of course, saying that, I start out with one that I kept a complete run, and this one will probably go into the keeper pile. And it's from DC, from 1987 to about 2010, The Question.
Oh, I love that book.
And I believe I finally finished it. I have all the books. And I'm using AtomicAvenue.com for my descriptions because what they write is usually better than anything I can come up with. But their summary of this is Vic Sage, and again, this is pre-52. Vic Sage can turn himself into the faceless Question by simply donning a mask and unleashing the adhesive gas to attach it. The resulting effect to criminals is like being attacked by a faceless enemy. However, by the time this series begins, too many people know his secret identity. Sage is forced to give it up. He flees to South America. The rest of it, just go pick it up. It's a fantastic series. It's based, of course, off the old Steve Ditko character. And they have 35 issues. There's two annuals. The annuals also tie into, I think, Green Arrow and a Batman for the year. And there's also five quarterly books. And then a one-shot called The Question Returns. And it's really, I remember reading it as it came out and I enjoyed it immensely. I don't know if it's ever been in book form, but this is probably one of those that I will probably keep and read and reread and re-reread. Actually, I see at the end of this, they did have five books, reprinting almost all of it up to like issue 30. But the last ones in the quarterly issues, you'll probably have to dig out of a quarter box somewhere.
I am actually going to recommend that you buy this as the back issues. Just for the letters pages. The letters pages were just as entertaining as the regular comic because they got into philosophical discussions. And one of the things that I found interesting, The Question was really Steve Ditko's first attempt at a objectivist superhero. Now, objectivism is the philosophy that Ayn Rand, who did Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead, created. And Steve Ditko became very enamored of it in the mid-60s, and still is. And Denny O'Neill, however, is about as far from an objectivist as you can get. So there were some people who were upset that he had changed the personality of The Question so far from the Ditko creation. So there was a lot of discussion in the letter pages about that. He also, in every issue, would have a recommended book. And I have read all of them.
Ooh.
And some of them, Zen Without Zen Masters is one of my favorite books I've ever read. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, the P.G. Wodehouse mystery novels. So it's worth it to go and get the back issues because they're not going to cost a lot. You know, they're probably in the dollar bins. Just, you know, not just to get the story, but also to get those letter pages. I love the question. They did a new version of the question in the comic 52, where Vic Sage, spoilers, passed away from lung cancer, and a character from the series Gotham Central picked up the mantle and became the new question.
And in the DC 52, he's part of a, a trio of some type of evil that was judged. I think Pandora, Phantom Stranger, and the Question are part of this. And the Question's really been screwing around with the Phantom Stranger, so I think they're going head to head. That's one of the few DC books I still read.
Okay.
The next one, as we're cruising through the R's, is an Image book called Ratiskull and Devil Doll. There were three issues published by Image around 2002, and they're based on a series of internet short films by Joe Sparks. And Ratiskull and Devil Doll, it's kind of a hilarious, for those that not in the know, Ratiskull is a floating skull with a purple mohawk, and he hates all things good. And Devil Doll is Ratiskull's adorably demonic sidekick. And there's three issues. They basically hate Christmas, hate love, and they hate summer fun. And again, these are probably in the quarter book somewhere. If you like the internet short films, they're definitely worth picking up, and they're kind of fun to read. You know, just kind of off subversive stuff.
Have not ever read them, and I don't know if I've even heard
of
them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's half the fun of this. You know, I picked this up probably because I like Christmas covers, and then I picked up the love, and I didn't even realize there was a third issue. So somewhere along the line, I missed it. So the next one is a book called Rag Mop. And it was originally published.
What did you call me?
I called you a mop rag. But this is Rag Mop by creator Rob Walton. They had 10 issues from Planet Lucy Press, which is self-published. And then there were three issues from Image. And the first Rag Mop series opened with an escape of a trio of dinosaurs from the Ice Age in a convenient spaceship, and it swiftly sagged into corporate maneuvers, political intrigue, the search of Thrill Kitten, a.k.a. Alice Hawking, for a lucrative gig as a comic book villain, and the imminent collision of an asteroid with Earth. And then the Image one was kind of unsuccessful because it only lasted three issues. I think this was part of Jim Valentino's Shadowline effort. And there was, I guess, a final self-published issue that kind of wrapped everything up. And I picked these up in a quarter bin because the covers were just fantastic looking. I've never read them because I'm still missing a few, and there's nothing that drives me crazier than like having, you know, 9 issues and missing issue 10 or something. But just reading it, it's probably one of those I'll hang on to. And when I'm feeling a bit crazy, I'll just jump right into it. Because, I mean, they add in a rampant lobotomist, a millionaire pope, and his teenage flagellant son, sundry Nazis, the Tetra Gamma Manton, Pildon Man, and other characters. I mean, just it's a universal chase. It says it's sly, snide, perceptive, exciting, and gust-bustingly funny. So, that's, you know, for a quarter box, that's not too bad. And like I said, the last issue was published in 98. So this is one of those books that are probably harder to find anywhere because nobody's collecting it. You know, you can go to atomicavenue.com or check on eBay. Might be worth checking out. Speaking of unusual Image books, the next one is one I picked up again. It's from Image. It's from 2001. Randy O'Donnell is the Mon. It's by Tom DeFalco and Ron Lim. Self-proclaimed geek Randy O'Donnell is not the man at his high school. He's a video game addict who can't work up the nerve to ask out anybody. But when the magic of Edrice reaches out for a savior for the fantastic world of, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, it grabs Randy the wuss, Randy the loser. But on this world, Randy is the man. And it lasted 3 issues, and I think he appeared in an Image crossover around that time. And I'm pretty sure you can find these in the dime box. So.
Not even good enough for a quarter,
Brad. Afraid not.
They're in the dime box. Didn't even know there was such a thing as a dime box.
Nope. All right. The next one is a one shot again from Image called Rail Broken Things. And it's a one shot by Dave Dorman. It's stunning art, and apparently the reviewer on Atomic Avenue doesn't like it because he says reads like a not particularly well translated graphic novel. So I picked it up because it's got a nice cover with a rail on it. One of the things I like outside of comic books is I'm a kind of a train fan. I like watching trains. Woo woo. So again, a one shot. If you like Dave Dorman, check it out. If you don't, well, you know, it's in your friendly neighborhood quarter box. The next title is from DC, The Ray. And this is based from the miniseries, The Ray. And it's the Ray Tyrell, or Tyrell, I guess. The book is penned by Christopher Priest. And it's basically, Ray as a hero with near godlike powers. And I don't have the whole series. I just kept the Christmas cover, which I believe is number, I don't know which issue number it was. I think it might have been number 28. And then there's an annual that I picked up as well because it was a year one. I think that was the year DC in 95 was doing all year one. So, again, just ones I pick up just because I like the Christmas cover. Let's see. The next one is, here we go. It's the Razor and She special from London Knight, 1994. This is a reprint of, I believe, it was a Razor special from London Knight that has the first appearance of She in it. I remember this because there used to be a magazine that came out. It was comic book size. And when I had Hot Comics, its premise was that these are books you should buy because they're going to go up in price. And for the most part, they were wrong, except for that particular one. They say if you had the Razor special, put it aside because this new book coming out called She will be real hot. And they were right. And, you know, we had one copy in the shop and I kind of put it aside. And then, of course, it went to like $20. And then later on, London Knight reprinted it. And that's the issue I have of Razor and She special. The art itself is not spectacular. Again, it is the first appearance of She, so it's worth picking up. The She special I'm talking about has 2 editions, a platinum edition and then the regular edition. And it's most notable because it has Joe Linsner doing the art on the cover. And while we're waiting here, Let me see if I can find the Razer special. Problem with Razer is that there's so many titles involved with her. And I'm just curious what the special, oh, here it is, the annual one. It's kind of held its value. It's about, still about $20 if you can find it in mint shape. And again, that was way back 1993. So whatever the magazine was that told me to put that aside failed, as did all its other advice. But in this case, it worked. The next book is just one I have a single issue of again. It's called The Red Star, and this one's from Image. It's a blending of two worlds of fantasy and science fiction into what the author calls one visually stunning package. It's uses 3D computer models. It has some outstanding coloring effects. It's presented as a flashback. The stories follow the aftermath that ensues with the collapse of the Red Fleet, a Soviet-like military power, and it's at the hands of an evil sorcerer. So it has futuristic crafts, weaponry. I only have a single issue. It's a variant cover of issue 6. It was a dealer incentive cover, and it's going to be going on eBay, so look for it if you care. They did have a couple limited edition books, which I remember selling years ago, and I don't know if this one ever came back. Sometimes you see these books, they disappear, and they'll come back again under a different publisher. And this one, let's see, they did have a Red Star Volume 2. And that was published by CrossGen. So obviously they made a good move from Image to CrossGen. So it started year 2000. The last one showed up 2004. So my guess is you could probably find these in the quarter box again. And that's really the core of my collection is how many quarter boxes stuff can I have? The next title is a good one, Ren and Stimpy. If you don't know Ren and Stimpy, you know, there's not much hope for you. And this is from Marvel Comics. It is based off the animated cartoon that was on Nickelodeon and MTV and in DVDs and Netflix and whatever, so you can check it out. Marvel did a great job of making a comic worth reading. And there's a couple specials, too. I picked up the issues. I've got like 1 through 13 and 16 and 19. I picked it up when Dreamhaven was doing one of their package deals where they bundled like 44 issues together and a bunch of specials and whatever. So I picked up as many as I could. And the one that I kept is the Powdered Toast Man versus Spider-Man, which is, you know, really, you think Spider-Man would have a better agent, because every time you turned around, he was being pawned off. He had to go with Top Dog, he had to go with Heathcliff, and now he with Powdered Toast Man. So the guy shows up in Transformers. I mean, maybe I'll do a collection of just offbeat Superman or Spider-Man team up. But and of course, the Powdered Toast Man versus Spider-Man is one of the books that I'll always mourn about selling, because I had one that was autographed by Gary Owings, the DJ who did Powdered Toast Man. He also did the voice of the original Space Ghost in the cartoon show. So it's rare to have him autograph a comic book, much less any comic, unless you're living in LA and know where he lives. So. And the last title for today, because...
Well, hold on. We need to talk a little about the Ren and Stimpy comic.
Please do, as my voice is going.
writer on most issues of the Ren and Stimpy comic is this unknown guy named Dan Slott. This was kind of the first thing he did for Marvel. And he got typecast because the first issue sold scary well.
Well, it also came with three unique things inside. One had like a air freshener. One had a hook. They were bagged. So, you know, back then people were buying, they wanted all three. You know, that was just
bag.
And of course, yeah, you had to buy a fourth one because if you wanted to read the bloody thing, you had to open it.
And the sad thing is, after this, Dan Slott kind of got typecast as writing comedy. So he had trouble breaking into writing superhero stuff. I listened to an interview with him a while back, and he said he had to go over to DC to write an Arkham Asylum miniseries before Marvel would go, oh, hey, yeah, you can write superhero stuff. So that's how he was able to come over to Marvel and get the job on She-Hulk, which his version of She-Hulk did fairly well, but it was really good. And they collected all, both, he did two 12-issue runs, and they've been collected in four books. Highly recommended. And Ren and Stimpy, the Ren and Stimpy cartoon was only good when John Kricafalusi was in charge of it. Once he left, I kind of, you know, I'd watched it for a while, but it wasn't very good. And then, you know, fell out of the habit. And then remember when the Nashville Network became Spike TV, one of the things they were pushing is, we're bringing back Ren and Stimpy with John Kricafalusi. Woo! And I think he only did like three or four episodes before they fired him because the show was constantly late.
Yeah, he was slow.
But the comic was almost as good as the Kricafalusi episodes. After Kricafalusi left, the comic was much better than the cartoon was. So if you've picked up the Ren and Stimpy first two DVD sets, which I guess is all the John Kay stuff, and you want more, don't buy the third, fourth, and fifth DVD set. Just go root around in the quarter books again to buy these comics. It's kind of like Futurama. When Futurama was canceled the first time, it's, well, at least we have the comic, and it's almost as good. And then it came back, and it was, oh, well, it's not quite as good as it used to be. Matter of fact, the comic's a little better now. And now we're back to just having the comic book. Well, Joe, let's do one more.
Yep.
And then we'll jump into our special feature.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, this one is from Amaze Inc., and it went to Image, and it finished at Handicraft. The Replacement Gods by creator Xander Cannon.
A local guy.
Yeah, I don't think he's done anything since this. I'm pretty sure. The Replacement God is his self-published work. It's the story of a young man named Newt who has been chosen as the replacement god. Not only is this a lot to take in, it's a politically touchy situation as the replacement god is prophesied to topple the kingdom. Thus, King Ursus and his political advisor arrest Newt, but he escapes, and along the way he meets a girl named Anne and becomes smitten with her. And again, there was 8 issues from Amaze Inc., there were 5 from Image, and I think 6 from Handicraft. And I'm not sure if the series was ever finished. There is a book that collects the Amaze Inc. ones. And I'm pretty sure if you bring this up to Xander at one of the cons, he'll get a kick out of it. Because I always find a lot of the creators, like Peter Gross, if you bring his early self-published stuff up, Empire Lanes, which I'll talk about as soon as I find him, he'll probably get a kick out of it because I'm pretty sure a lot of people forget that. Or if you tease Pete Krause with early Entropy Tales. Yes, he says, Joe, you're a evil, evil man. So I'm just looking here. I'm trying to see when the last, I think the Handicraft was the last one. We're talking, these were like 1998. It was kind of interesting because a lot of titles that were self-published were picked up by Caliber and under their Amaze Inc., which was kind of a all age line, you would have all these just wonderful titles. And then when Caliber disappeared, occasionally you'd see things pop up, like it went, it popped up at Image. And, you know, bless Valentino for trying. He tried to get this going under the Image name. And then let's see, it ended up, like I said, it's one issue from Handicraft in 98. And I think that pretty much summed it up. And since then, Xander's gone on to do, I think top 10, wasn't it?
Yep.
And, he's still chugging away. And we'll close the box right now, put the lid back on, and we'll finish the other half sometime in the future. Like I said,
I have a list, Joe.
A list? Now we're...
A list! Now, I listen to other podcasts, I know.
You whore.
I know. And Peter Rios, who does The Daily Rios, except it's not daily anymore. But he did a year of a daily podcast, so you got to give him props for that. And he used to be on Comic Geek Speak. He went through and did a episode where he kind of went through the first year of Marvel Now. And I figured, you know, that's a cool idea. Why don't I steal it?
Why not? Yeah.
So what I'm going to do, I have my own little list here of the Marvel Now books and my thoughts on them. And, you know, you can chime in too if you want. Like I could stop.
True,
you.
True.
Okay. So, first one we have is Uncanny Avengers. I'm still reading it, but it doesn't feel like the cornerstone book that it was pitched as. It was supposed to be, this is going to be the core book of the Marvel Universe. And it doesn't feel like that now. I do like the tension in the group between the mutants and the Avengers, but it needs some resolution soon because it's starting to feel like every issue is the mutants yell at the Avengers yell at the mutants, and the bad guy's able to beat them up because they don't trust each other. But I will say that first six issues, the Red Skull story, that was phenomenal. Since then, it's kind of been drifting. But I'm still reading it, and I still like it.
It's on the chopping block for me. I'm kind of at the point where it's like, well, maybe I'll let it go. Again, I like the first storyline, and I've got about maybe four or five lined up. Maybe if I sit and read them all at once, it might be more interesting. But, you know, compared to some of the other stuff going on in the other books, I'm like, this one's just not doing it.
Next up is A Plus X, which is the anthology team-up book.
Hated it.
Really?
Nah, didn't bother. It's one of those books
I could read
the story on the stands and just read the artists and the writers that I want to, and then just, I read it. I'm good.
See, for me, I love this kind of book because I love an anthology book. I love something I could just pick up and read. And I don't have to read issues before or issues after. Some of the creative teams have been a lot of fun. I also know that these anthology books don't do very well, and they're going to be putting in a continued story as the lead feature, and then a backup story that's, you know, just a one-shot, a one-and-done. But I have fun with this. It reminds me of the old Marvel team-up, where it's, here's two heroes. We're going to throw them together. They interact. They beat up a bad guy. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot of mental energy. It's just a good, fun read.
Just doesn't interest
me. Next is All New X-Men. All New X-Men's the first X-Men book I have enjoyed since Grant Morrison left the X-Men back in 2004? Yeah, I think it was 2004. Written by Brian Michael Bendis. I know that he gets a lot of crap online, but I still think his writing is great. Each character has their own voice, their own personality. There aren't 14 side plots going on. He has set up a very interesting premise where the original X-Men are brought to the present, and they're kind of freaked out by what the X-Men have become, so they're dealing with that. He's made Jean Grey a character I care about for the first time since, the Byrne Claremont years. And I'm loving the crossover they're doing. So I don't know how long they're going to keep up the thing with the original X-Men in the present, but I'm really loving the book. Joe?
I will give Bendis my money because I will stick with it. I absolutely love what he did with the Avengers, and I will stick with him through the X-Men. You know, and as we get through it, we're going to discover there are some other X titles that I probably won't. It's almost like if I see Bendis on it, I'll buy it. If it's not Bendis, it's crap.
Captain America, the new creative team of Rick Remender and John Romita Jr., they did a love story to the Jack Kirby 70s Captain America. John Romita Jr. drew in that big Kirby style. It was set in Dimension Z with Arnim Zola, which was a very weird character that Kirby created, and I'm amazed that people still use because it's one of Kirby's stranger characters. I loved it. It was big art, big fights. It was Captain America dealing with huge issues and overcoming the odds, just like always. There is a twist at the end of the final issue that brings back something that's been missing from Captain America for a long time, and he's a man out of time, which I think is important. I think because Captain America has been around since the 60s, a lot of writers just kind of gloss over the fact that he was, you know, he's a guy who was around in the 40s, got frozen in ice, and is thawed out in the present day. This story gives him a different man out of time, because while he was in Dimension Z, for him, 10 years passed. For the rest of the world, it was a couple of days. So they're starting the second story arc. I'll be interested to see where it's going, but I'm happy with Captain America. Joe?
Don't read it. One of those books I let go when Ed Brubaker finished.
Deadpool. It's a Deadpool book.
Don't read it.
No better, no worse, no different. If you like Deadpool, here's a Deadpool book. If you don't like Deadpool, this is not going to change your mind.
I will when Deadpool finally meets Ambush Bug. I think that would be fun.
I grouped Fantastic Four and FF together. I'm liking the Fantastic Four. I like the storyline they're doing where their bodies are starting to break down because of the cosmic rays. So they're traveling around the universe to try and find a cure. Mark Bagley's art has been a lot of fun. I like how he draws the Fantastic Four. The one problem I have is Valeria, the youngest child of Reed Richards and Sue Storm. They've made her to where she is so intelligent that it's really hard to write a story where she can't think up, oh, well, you know, you just whip up this and everything's solved. She's like Wesley Crusher times 100. Yeah. FF, however, is a book I read the first issue and liked it, but then I kind of lost. You know, it was one of those where, okay, I've only got so much time to read comics, and it was at the bottom of the list, so I'll be reading it in trades because it does tie in with the main story. I like Mike Elred's art, but you can't read everything.
Yeah.
God knows I've tried.
Yeah, FF I gave up on. Fantastic Four, I'm almost on the verge of giving up on, but I guess a new creative team's coming, so I'll give them a try. Again, it's kind of like the last guys who had it just wowed me, and these guys aren't wowing me, and that's not their fault, but I mean, who wanted to be the guy following Alan Moore on Swamp Thing? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Indestructible Hulk. I love Mark Waid's writing, but this series is very hit or miss. There are some stories that are great and a lot of fun. The Walt Simonson Thor story. Mm-hmm. And some where I get to the end of it and it's pretty much a, what? Sometimes the art gets in the way of what's going on because every story arc has their own art team and some of the art teams just aren't as good. The premise also I have a little trouble with because they've basically it's the Hulk leading a team of characters and they have not taken the time to really flesh out the characters yet. And we're, 12, 13 issues in. So I think they need to take some time, get us interested in all the supporting characters, and maybe I'd like the book a lot more.
It's actually one I think I just added to my list.
Okay.
Again, I picked it up. The premise didn't really wow me. And then I picked up the Walt Simonson issues, which I loved. And they're doing a time travel thing, which I'm a sucker for in the current issues. So I figure I'd pick it up, give it a try, and see where they go with it.
Iron Man! The secret origin of Tony Stark story that they just finished up annoyed me to no end. Because it's another one of these, everything you know is wrong. Tony Stark was not, he's not just a really brilliant inventor. He was genetically engineered to be an uber inventor, smarter than any human on the planet for this, big cosmic purpose. And you have to quit overpowering your characters. You have to quit making the characters so powerful and so brilliant and so capable that there's no challenge. I do like that they've sent Tony Stark into space so he can be in the Guardians of the Galaxy. The first six issues I liked because it kind of used the extremist storyline. And it did a thing where it was a continued story, but you could read one issue at a time. Greg Land's art only annoys me when I can tell what he's tracing. It's a middle-of-the-road book. I'm worried that they're going to make Iron Man so super powerful that it's... Iron Man is not a guy who should be going toe-to-toe with Thanos. Joe?
Don't read it.
Thor, God of Thunder. This is the best of the Marvel Now books. This book is phenomenal. The God Killer story. Just go to your comic shop, find one of the issues of the God Killer story, open it up and look at that art. And then realize that's not painted art, that's penciled. Jason Aaron is doing a Thor that's the most interesting Thor since Walt Simonson did it in the 80s. The God Killer story, if you haven't read it, go buy the trades. You're going to love it. It's, he gets Thor. And I think it's issue 12 is a done in one. And it shows why Thor still goes to Earth, why Thor loves Earth. And each, basically it's two pages of him meeting with different people. So it's really 10 two-page stories in one. I praised this book a few episodes back. I'll praise it again. Thor, God of Thunder, the best of the Marvel Now books.
And I picked up the graphic novel at the con based on your somewhat subdued recommendation, so I give it a try.
Yeah, it's hard to tell how I feel about
it. It is.
X-Men Legacy. I got to admit, I didn't pick it up because I think Legion, who's the lead character in the book, is one of the most... It's an X-Men character I could not give less of a shit about. It's Charles Xavier's son who's got multiple personality disorder, and every personality has a different power, and I understand there is a story to be told with his crazy son wanting to get revenge for his dad being killed. But it doesn't deserve its own book, and I haven't heard anyone say that this is a great comic, so I just haven't been moved to pick it up.
Again, you know, too many X books, and while I give Bendis my money, I didn't care. That was even before Bendis took over. There were so many X books before, I just didn't care. And I think that's a problem what Marvel is doing. It's kind of like, hey, we're not using this character. Well, here, let's put Wolverine with them and make a book.
Avengers and New Avengers. Yeah, Joe and I have been praising these since they came out. Jonathan Hickman's the guy who did that fantastic Four run that Joe and I love so much. His Avengers run. It's all been leading up to Infinity. It feels big. It feels important. There are all these new concepts and new ideas and new situations. And the way he's using Thanos in Infinity, it's like, oh, for the first time in a long time, Thanos is really interesting again. He's picked up things like the new universe. Warren Ellis had some ideas for the new universe he was going to do in a 12-issue miniseries. He did 6 issues, got bored, and wandered off. I don't know. He must have went down to the pub to drink and forgot he was doing the book. So Hickman picked up those ideas and started using them. Stellar, stellar books. Very, very happy with them.
I agree. Enough said.
Avengers Arena. I'll be honest, I picked it up. I tried it. I hate the concept. I hate that it's, oh, we've got all these new young characters and we're going to put them in Battle Royale. And Marvel wonders why people don't invest in their new characters. It's because, you know, when they don't immediately become hits, they do series where they kill them off. I'm reminded of that new X-Men and Young X-Men series they did a few years ago where it's, oh, the sales aren't really good. Okay, every story will be about one of them dying. And then, oh, like 30 of them lose their power. Oh, and they get blown up in a bus. This feels like the same thing. You've got these characters. If they're not catching on, kind of set them aside for a while and somebody else will use them. Somebody will have an idea. It's not, okay, it didn't catch on, so kill them off one by one. That'll sell.
Well, it works so well for DC, you know, every time they, especially in Earth 2, you know, like, well, we're going to cripple Wildcat, but here comes his niece. Oh, she didn't do so good. Let's kill her off in the next crossover, you know.
Yeah.
I swear DC just lined these characters up so the next cross, you know, if they caught on like the Ray, cool. If not, well, we'll kill them off in the next crossover. And Blue Devil. We'll kill him off a few times.
Cable and X-Force? That book I like. I like the idea of Cable is getting precognitive visions of bad things that are going to happen. So he assembles a team and they go stop the bad thing before it happens. But because they're stopping the bad thing before it happens, everybody thinks that they're terrorists. So they're being hunted by the X-Men and the authorities and the Avengers. It's a good premise. It's a good book. I really enjoy it. Well worth a read. Well worth a read.
Just another one I missed just because don't have the money. Although I'll look for it. You know, if it comes out in book form, I'll give it a shot.
Thunderbolts. I think I lost interest by the 3rd issue.
That's still being published?
Yeah, they're going to do a revamp on it. Don't care. I still, Red Hulk is a character, does not interest me in any way, shape, or form. Thunderbolt Ross as a snotty, sarcastic version of the Hulk is about as appealing as a plate of fries that's been dropped on the ground, the cat slept on it, and then they serve it to you.
And it doesn't have to be that way, because when he was in the Avengers, he actually came across as almost a natural leader. You know, or it was, I think, the Avengers versus X-Men thing. He was telling people, yeah, you're going to fight your friends. You know you're going to do it. This is what you've got to do. You know, he actually came across more than just, you know, like you said, just a snotty, tough guy. He came across as an actual military leader.
Yeah.
Maybe he should be just put aside till somebody can write him properly.
Yeah. Morbius the Living Vampire. The book no one demanded. And it's canceled.
Well, it came out of Spider-Man.
It would have been nice if they would have built it up to the point where there was some demand, but it really felt like, we're going to do a Morbius book, so cram him into a 3-part story over in Spider-Man so that people remember who the character is. Let's see. Savage Wolverine.
Tomorrow's Comic Cons need quarter books too, you know.
Savage Wolverine. It has become the Legends of the Dark Knight version of Wolverine, where you'll get a creative team. They come in, they do a
Frank
story,
Cho.
Then the next team. The Frank Cho issues were a lot of fun. Beautiful art. Any book where he draws Shaun of the She-Devil, I'm going to buy it.
Yes.
And he loves putting stories in the, in the Savage Land, because, hey, he gets to draw monkeys, he gets to draw dinosaurs, he gets to draw women in bikinis. I'm buying that. Is that sexist? Sure, don't care.
I would say 3 thumbs up, but we're keeping it a PJ show.
The Joe Madureira story, I guess some people like it. I've lost interest. I'll read it when it's all done. And I don't know who the next creative team is, but I think this is going to be a book that I decide based on who's working on it. The next one is Superior Spider-Man.
Ooh, love it, love it, love it.
Same here. And they do, if you're paying attention, I think they're showing you how the story's going to end. And it has a lot to do with that very famous 3-part Steve Ditko story back when he was on Amazing Spider-Man, the Master Planner saga.
Oh, they're bringing the Master Planner back. Cool!
No, the Master Planner is Spider-Man, because the Master Planner was Dr. Octopus.
Ooh. Okay, well, I won't have to buy that issue then. Okay, next.
Let's see, Uncanny X-Force. As good as Cable and X-Force is, boy, this book's a mess. I don't know why the characters are together. I don't know what the main plot is. I don't know why, other than, last time we did Uncanny X-Force, it sold well, so let's do it again. Young Avenger, Joe. Sorry, ran you over on that.
That doesn't matter. It's an X book that I didn't, non-Bendis X book. Don't care.
Young Avengers. Love the first series. Really love the mini series they did a while back, the Children's Crusade. After 2 issues, it's one of those that slipped to the bottom of the pile, and after a while, it's, I've got 5 issues, and I've read 2 of them. Well.
Not even on my radar.
Fearless Defenders. Boy, that first story arc sucked. I wanted to like this book, because Valkyrie is one of the characters from the Defenders. I've always liked Valkyrie. And I wish that they would just go back to the characterization they had in the 70s. Because every time they try to do something new with her, no one cares. Oh, and by the way, the book's been canceled.
Okay, good. Another Defender book I can put away.
Yep. Guardians of the Galaxy. Bendis gets Joe's money.
Oh, yeah.
He gets mine,
Piece
too.
Piece of cake. I love it.
this book is just fun. I think I texted everybody I knew when I was reading either issue 3 or 4, where Rocket Raccoon is just flying around. Hey, blam, murdered you, blam, murdered you, blam, murdered you. He's in a fight with a bunch of space mercenaries, just killing them off gleefully. Well, you gotta love the fact that here is a flying, talking, murderous raccoon.
With an animated tree as a best friend.
Yes. I cannot tell you how cool it is that they're getting a movie. Now, over at Warner Brothers, well, you know, it's going to be hard to do a Wonder Woman movie because the character's just too complicated. Marvel's doing Rocket Raccoon, Groot, Gamora, and Star-Lord. And Drax the Destroyer. Oh, yeah. Very fun team book. I know a lot of people were upset when it wasn't by Abnett and Lanning, who'd done the Marvel Cosmic for a long time with Annihilation and all that. But Bendis is really doing a good job on this book. I like how they've brought Angela into the Marvel Universe. And, yeah, this book's just a lot of fun. Let's see. We're getting near the end. Nova.
I'm reading it.
I'm reading it. I didn't want to like the main character, but I do. It still feels like it's coming together. It feels like the first story arc was kind of its own separate thing, and now that there's a new creative team on it, they're kind of still learning their way. But I like the character. And I like where it's going, so it's, you know, middle of the road. You know, I enjoy it. I'm not going to jump up and down and say I love it, but I enjoy it. Secret Avengers. I want to like this book, but boy, it's a mess.
Yeah.
Brubaker's Secret Avengers really felt like, okay, they're a covert team that goes in and does stuff. This feels more like they really don't have a direction other than, well, we want to use the Black Widow, and we want to use Hawkeye, and we want to use Mockingbird, and then there are other characters we want to throw in. But it doesn't really have its own feel yet. So it's slipping to the bottom of the pile.
Yeah, that was just one I passed on.
Uncanny X-Men? This is the flip side of the other Bendis X-Men book. This is Cyclops and his team. And it ties in a lot with all new X-Men. I enjoy this too. The thing about Bendis is he takes these stories that have been floating around the Marvel Universe for a long time and does them in a way that it feels interesting, and it's a well-put-together story. The magic story he's done is the first magic story ever that has been clear and made sense. And I like the fact that the characters are kind of on the edge of the law. Cyclops thinks that he's doing the right thing. And there are other members of the team that aren't quite so sure if they're the new Brotherhood of Evil Mutants or not. And I like that they've recruited new X-Men, and the kids are acting like, yeah, this is weird. Should we be here? Which is one of the problems I have with the X-Men is when they recruit a new X-Men, they're like, oh, I'm a mutant, it's horrible and bad, but I really like using my powers and fighting bad guys. These characters are more like, we're just confused. There's a whole lot of shit going on we don't know about. Joe?
I read it. I like it. Enough said.
Let's see, the last one on the list is X-Men. This is the Brian Wood X-Men book. I really like Brian Wood. I'm still reading DMZ. My favorite indie book right now is The Massive. I want to love this book, but it still feels like it's coming together. And it doesn't feel any different from any other X-Men book. And once again, I don't know why these characters are together on a team. In the two Bendis books, I know why the characters are together as a team. They've given me a reason why this group of characters is working together toward this goal. Cable and X-Force, again, I know why those characters are together. The two Avengers books. With this book, it feels more like, okay, we've got all these X-Men left over. Yeah. Grab five of them.
But make them women. We just want the women.
Yeah.
Only the women. How much for the women? How much for the little girls?
Your wife and little girl. I want to buy them. Yes.
Yeah, Freed, same thing. I bought it thinking, cool. But again, if you're not going to tie into the main X-Men story or do something like with Cable, where, you know, he's off on the fringe, it's just like, well, these characters weren't important enough to be in the main story, but let's do a sub story. You know, it's just, and it's a good title, X-Men, but it's just not wowing me. And really, that's the bottom line. You know, a lot of these series that are out, you really got to wow me. I mean, we talked earlier, at least I think we did, about, you know, it's like, okay, the threats are getting so galactic and overwhelming that it's almost to the point where it's ridiculous. How are we going to top what's happening in Infinity now? And, you know, it's almost funny because you go back and you read the, 1970 Spider-Man, where he's just busy bopping, you know, muggers on the head in an alley. And now he's out, you know, with Doc Ock's mind stopping time inversions, you know. It's, you know, I don't know. As long as you can wow me. And the problem is, without the wow factor, your book's just not going to sell for me, even if it is a pedigree name like X-Men or something cool like Uncanny Avengers. So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Now, for me, it doesn't have to be the universe is going to be destroyed to wow me.
No, Hawkeye wows me.
Hawkeye, Daredevil wows me.
Yeah.
Every time I pick up an issue of Daredevil, I'm blown away. Why? He's made the character interesting. The threat feels like a threat. The character feels like there is some major obstacle to overcome. And the other thing about it is you can't always have that. Well, Thor, great example. Thor, you get this huge story, the God Killer, who is in the future, he has killed off gods of all these different worlds. How do you follow that up? You do a single issue story of Thor checking in on Earth. It doesn't have to be, you know, a universe shattering threat. It can be a small self-contained story. As long as we care about the character and what they're doing is interesting, you're going to wow me. And I think, you know, in my superhero books, that's what I'm looking for. Walking Dead, they've started this 12-issue story called All Out War. And they've been building to it for quite a while. And the first issue wowed me because it's okay. You've got Rick, who's kind of a forward, you know, he's basically, you know, he's a former cop. It's, there's a threat, we go, we get overwhelming force, and we attack it. And the enemy is more of a chess player. So you've got the contrast of the two characters. That's what's interesting. And everybody said, oh, you know, I forget the new villain's name. He's just like the governor. He's just like the governor. No, the governor was batshit crazy. This new guy is a brilliant tactician. So it's a very different threat. And Walking Dead 115 that starts the all-out war story. Did you hear about the sales on it, Joe?
No.
350,000 copies.
No variant covers?
Oh, yeah, lots of variant covers.
Okay, excellent. You had me at variant.
Well, that's Marvel Now. I think we will not be recording next week because I will be in Chicago from Friday till Tuesday.
Cool.
So how about when we come back, we take a look at Marvel Now Wave 2, what we're interested in and what we go, never last.
Never last. Cool. And I'll finish off my box and I can put it away because it's been sitting here since July and it's really bugging my wife.
And obscure character. Let's do obscure characters.
Give me enough time to maybe find one.
Listen to us, kids. We're planning.
I know. It'll never happen. Don't worry, folks. Don't get worried.
Yeah, and then next time it'll be, we'll do something else and we've completely forgotten about it because, we've been promising to talk about that Hulk song.
Oh, yeah.
For, a month. Yep. And I keep saying, when we do the Hulk song, I'll talk about that Spider-Man album from the 70s. Yep. Of course, that means I have to listen to it again.
Well, I actually had the CD of it, and I think I sold it.
So do I. I have the CD of it. I listened to it like twice, and I went, oh.
There's like maybe one or two songs that were like, this could have been playworthy if I was on radio station.
Not me. I wouldn't have played it on my
radio
show. Oh,
I would have, just to torque off the programming manager.
Well, kids. Believe it or not, I've stayed up late, and you've listened to us blather on about funny books for over an hour.
No geeking and freaking?
Joe, we've gone an hour and 20 minutes, and I need to get some
sleep. Oh, we gotta do geeking and freaking. That's like our signature.
Okay. Joe, what you freaking on?
I got nothing. Actually, it's that time of year in Minnesota, and we're all babies. You know, right now there's like snow flurries outside and people are like, oh, it's so cold. It's like not even 30 degrees. It's like 34 degrees. You know, we got to get to December where we have that 1 week of like 30 below weather. And then the rest of the winter where it's like 0 to 20 above, we'll all be going, oh, this is beautiful. Let's go sunbathing, you know. Every year it's the same.
Well, I can tell you one thing I'm freaking on.
What's that?
The owner, creator of Filmation Studios passed away.
Saw that.
And everybody is going on and on and on about how great he was and how they loved that stuff when they were a kid and how it was such good. Joe, those shows sucked.
Yeah, the crappy animation.
They looked terrible.
He was prolific,
I'm watching Star Trek, the animated series, and while the scripts are okay, the animation makes my eyes bleed. There are like two or three whenever the Enterprise is going, that stuff's rotoscoped. And it doesn't look terrible, but it's not good because it's 2 frames a second. But, anytime the characters are moving, it's this horrid walking stuff that just looks terrible. And as an animated show, boy, they stand around talking a lot.
Oh, come on. How many half-face shots of Kirk can you like, and then all you do is see his eye move?
Yeah. Or, they're going to be walking on the planet. We're going to pull back. They're all in silhouette because silhouette is easier and cheaper to animate than actually drawing in their costumes and their faces. Ugh. And Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, I liked it as a kid. I tried watching some a few years ago. They're just ugly and
didn't hold up.
They're just ugly looking cartoons.
But see, Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids had one advantage that the other cartoons didn't. At that time of the morning, which is like right before noon, it was the only animated show on because everything else had switched to pre-sports or whatever was going to be on that afternoon. So they really had some competition.
Where I grew up, it was hunting shows. And I don't hunt. I don't care about hunting. And watching some guy sit in a deer blind for a half hour talking about the sort of scent he's using.
You know, I love God's creatures. Doesn't mean I don't relish blowing their brains out.
God, as a kid, it's like, these shows are so bad, I'm going to go outside and play. And it took a lot to get me to go outside and play. Excuse me. Geeking. Joe, what are you geeking on? What are you loving?
Oh, we went to go see Wicked down at the Orpheum in downtown Minneapolis. Musical.
Didn't I used to date her?
Fun. Yes. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. I like a good musical. I like the take on it. It's one of those where, well, you know, maybe the Wicked Witch of the West wasn't as wicked, get it, as we thought. You know, you might be a little cranky if you're the only green-skinned woman in Oz, and there was no Captain Kirk around to romance you. I caught up on Doctor Who, so I'm ready for the 50th episode, and I guess BBC released the trailer, which I'll be watching as soon as we finish up. I finished up Walking Dead last season. Unfortunately, we started it. My wife and I started watching reruns on AMC. I think it was like 11 o'clock. And we're like, oh, there's only three episodes we missed. No, we missed about five. So about 4 a.m. when we finished. Other than that, I'm really loving my smartphone. Ooh, it does so much. And I knew I would. That's why I resisted getting one. So... And for $50, I joined our union at work. So I got $50 in my pocket.
Oh, there
Corey,
you go.
What are you geeking on?
Comic-wise, I've just finished reading the Steve Gerber run on The Defenders. I read the annual that wraps up his 10-issue-long story with the Headmen and Nebulon creating...
and the hot chick with the ruby orb?
Yes. But also, being older now... The Nebulon creating this kind of self-improvement cult where everybody's bozos. It's like, wow, he's really making fun of that 70s move toward Est and all these other things where, if, you know, where they all turned out to be scams. But he's making fun of it while they were still popular. And I'm reading along. He does the annual, which wraps up most of the storylines. Then he does one issue after that, which really reads like a fill-in. And then Gary Conway takes over, and the book is no longer weird. He drops all the storylines. He drops all the supporting characters, and it becomes kind of a low-rent Avengers. So I've never seen a whiplash where... In the 70s, a new creator comes on and says, yeah, all that stuff that you readers really liked, fuck it, it's gone. But I really, really like that. Let's see. I'm reading Top of the Rock, which is a book by Warren Littlefield. Joe, do you know who Warren Littlefield is?
I do not.
He was the head of NBC programming through the 80s and 90s. He's the one who gave us The Cosby Show. He gave us Must See TV. He was involved in all that. And he tells the story of what it was like to run an NBC during those years, getting Bill Cosby to do the sitcom that he did. Because when they sat down with Cosby to say, we want to do a series with you, Cosby pitched them a series where he was a cab driver. And it was an hour-long drama where he was a cab driver who helped people solve their problems. And by the end of the meeting, they had The Cosby Show, which is a sitcom about his family.
Cool.
So, boy, anybody who can talk that big a star into that big of a change – talks about the creation of Seinfeld, goes into Cheers. And I'd always kind of knew that Cheers didn't do too well the first season.
Well, Family Ties was in there, yeah.
Yeah. But with Cheers, did you know that at the end of the first season, it was the lowest rated show on network television?
I do.
And they renewed it. And Littlefield said he renewed it because he liked it, and he knew that if he just figured out where to put it, it would be a hit. So you can't do that now.
No, not really.
You know, there's no way that sort of thing. Well, Seinfeld, when it was the Seinfeld Chronicles, those episodes did terrible.
Never last.
And he had to fight with, you know, he had to fight with people in order to get it renewed for a second season. He also talks about how the final season of Seinfeld, the money people at NBC sat down with Jerry and offered him $150 million to do another season. And Littlefield said he knew when he sat down with Jerry that Seinfeld would not agree to do another season because for the previous 2 years, Jerry had said in every meeting, you know, you've got a wife and a kid. I want that. You know, I don't have a life. I work all the time. I'm always working. I don't have time. So he knew no matter how much money they threw at him, he would say no. But it's really a good book. It's actually very well written, which a lot of the Hollywood memoirs I've read in the past aren't. It's a struggle to get through, but this one's really good.
Well, maybe I'll swap you out because I picked up a book called The Muppets, and it's kind of the same thing where it talks about just how bloody creative Jim Henson was, how driven he was to do his visions and get it out of his head. I mean, not only in the formation of the Muppets, I didn't realize they were so big pre-Sesame Street. He wasn't making a lot of money on it, but he was constantly doing stuff. And he was able to get Sesame Street going with the Muppets, which wouldn't have existed without it. His vision for Dark Crystal, for Labyrinth, for just doing the Muppet movies, it was just amazing. And of course, the big thing about how he passed away, you know, because he was raised a Christian Scientist and they pray for health, they don't go to a doctor. Everybody thought, well, that's what killed him. And it's like, no, that had nothing to do with it, because although he was raised with Christian Scientist parents, at least I think his mother, he didn't really follow that view. He was more respectful of religions, even though he wasn't overtly religious. But the problem is the bug he caught was so toxic by the time he decided, I gotta see a doctor, it was too late. It had liquefied in his lungs, you know, cause he was just feeling run down. If you ever saw that last appearance he did on the Arsenio Hall show, he had just caught it. And you could tell because he wasn't quite as witty as he normally is. And it's a wonderful book. You know, talks the behind the scenes stuff, and he's one of those creators like, you know, Farley, Belushi, that really died too soon, whereas with the other two, due to their own excess, and Jim's no fault of his own. You just wonder what kind of things he'd be coming up with now if he hadn't passed away. And just a fun book to read. Unfortunately, I downloaded it on my smartphone, so I can't just give you the physical book. But definitely worth reading.
Well, the Top of the Rock is a book I borrowed from the library, so I can't loan it to you either.
Jeez.
Speaking of libraries and stuff, which, you know, this doesn't, I have a very quick hanging at the home, Joe.
Ooh, time to hang.
You know how we've been shorthanded?
Yes.
And you know how they've got 5 full-time openings on the overnights, which is why I've been doing all this overtime. Well, they decided that they were going to have a job fair.
Ooh.
So they, last week on Tuesday and Wednesday, they had a job fair.
And?
One person showed up.
Ooh, lucky bastard.
one person. And one of the people I work with said, wow, wonder why they only had one person. I said, well, the only place they put an ad was in the free giveaway papers that you get in the mail. You know what most people do with the free giveaway papers you get in the mail?
I give them to my guinea pig.
They throw them away.
And they really should recycle, but that's a different.
And I'm not getting paid the best in the world, but you know what they're offering new people? $9.50 an hour.
Ooh, that's almost as good as Walmart.
That's less than the gas station in town, which isn't able to get people to work there. Mm. And you know what? At the gas station in town, you don't have to clean urine.
That's a positive, I guess.
So they've cut the starting wage by $2 after 50% of the workforce quit. And they're shocked. Shocked, I tell you, that no one is taking the job.
I'm shocked. Shocked! Okay, now you're laughing in the supervillain territory.
No, that supervillain laugh is this.
Well, I thought that sounded like a good BM laughter.
And of course, if you're a supervillain, what word do you have to use if you're a true supervillain?
Bah!
Bah! I've never heard anyone use that in real life.
And it really should be.
We need to bring it back. Justin Timberlake brought sexy back. We're bringing bah back. Well, maybe Joe will let me finish the show this time. Well, kids, believe it or not, you've now spent an hour and a half listening to us.
Which is fair because you're not going
to
have a show next week, and you didn't have one last week. So we really should. We owe it to him to go to 2 hours.
Yeah, but now it's like the middle of the night for me.
True. And it's in the middle of morning for me. And I got eBay stuff to package. I can't be wasting time talking to you.
So as we say every week,
and
kids,
we do.
The comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
I feel like dancing. Somebody call my mama. Hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Aye. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, 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 yo. Funk is on. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here. Don't say it.